The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind as part of Bite by Bite, a show, of course, both those run on Tony Curry Radio. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts, we're available on every major industry and our YouTube channel. And, of course, I do the show every single week with Michael Coleman. He is the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. And, Michael, we have a very special guest today.
Yeah, I'm real excited. It's taken us about 4 or 5 months of planning to be able to get this special lady. But before I introduce her, I want to kind of tell something that shows her impact. When I came to food banking and had to understand the relationship, so Feeding America's national office, you know, kind of sets the tone and kind of deals with everything on a national level. And they partner with 200 food banks, and all the counties are assigned to these food banks. And so it's really a unique relationship. And when I first got here, our food bank wasn't quite as engaged with the national organization and really didn't understand all that went on with that. And so when I came in, I remember my very first conference, and I was blown away as I began to learn about all the resources that Feeding America provides for us here on the ground. Feeding America, I mean, I've heard Claire say many, many times that, you know, they don't distribute food, but they empower us. They build this huge network and this vast network of support that enables us to do our job. And bottom line is, without them and what they do on a national level, we could not be close to the impact we're making. But I talked with somebody, even though we weren't that well connected at the time, she told me that she said, I said, I'm just so blown away at all the resources Feeding America. I've never seen anything like it. And she said, well, it wasn't like that in the past. And so I had never met Claire, but she said, that's their new CEO that's been there at the time about 4 years. And she said, they said her name is Claire Babineau Fontenot. And I was like, well, you know what? If I run into her, I'm going to tell her. So the very first conference I went to in Philadelphia last year, she spoke to the group, and I went up to her and I said, look, I'm brand spanking new, but I just want to tell you that everybody in the food banking industry who deals with this every single day just has told me that you have totally transformed this organization. And so I bring her in. I'm so privileged to be able to talk with her and introduce her. So at this time, I would like to introduce Ms. Claire Babineau Fontenot, the CEO of Feeding America. Welcome, Claire.
Wow. Thank you so much. And I must say, Mike, that in a former life, I was the chief tax officer at a major retailer. And people had rather low expectations when they were going to hear me speak, you know, go grab coffee, what have you, think they're going to fall asleep because I'm going to get out there and talk about the Internal Revenue Code is what they were afraid of. So I'm not accustomed to this positive billing that I just got from you just a moment ago in terms of that intro. I'm going to have to live up to your high expectations.
I was just going to say, well, I came out of, I've dealt with this population for a long time with a nonprofit I started here in Montgomery, was still going with workforce development. And then went to Birmingham and was involved with some homeless population with addiction recovery. So homeless has a whole network as well, but they cannot hold a candle to what you have done with Feeding America. Because, and I say this with just all seriousness, I have never needed anything that I reached out to Feeding America and did not get either a subject matter expert or somebody to enthusiastically point me in the right direction to help solve my problem. And that just doesn't come, as we talk about on Mission Minded all the time, that comes because the leadership at the top emphasizes that and drives that culture. And I'm sure you're very well appreciated in food banking, but there's no way you get enough credit for what you've built within the organization.
Wow. Well, it truly is humbling as And I am, that last name usually gives away that I wasn't born in Chicago, Illinois, which is where I'm privileged to live these days as in my capacity as CEO. I was born in a small town, Opelousas, Louisiana. I've been through your town many, many times. Know it well. And there's some basic fundamental things you learn. I hope everybody learns it everywhere, but I know we learned it growing up in the South. Things like commitment to hard work, being dedicated, being civil to each other, showing a commitment to partnership. And I have a chance to demonstrate how I was raised, that I was raised right in the role that I'm in right now. And I'm really thrilled. And it's very, very gratifying to believe that I have a role to play in what's so magical that happens in this network. By the way, you took to it like my mama would have said. You took to it like a fish to water, Mike. You haven't been in that role for a very long time. I know you were, you'd been a professional working, as you've already described today, working in service of your community for a very long time, but not in this job. It's not an easy role. And yet you've come in and led with your heart, and you made another statement. And I absolutely believe is true, fundamentally important and true. And there are two ways to say it, at least. And one of them is a fish rots from the head down. Or as the head goes, the body tends to follow. Right. So there's no question that we who are entrusted with leadership have a lot to say about the culture that we want to create, about what's important, what we're going to value, what we're going to reward, what we're going to refuse to allow. And I work hard to work. You work hard. I work hard to work hard for you. So yeah. I hope that you can feel it. And from what you said, which I found so humbling, it seems like maybe you do feel it.
I do. I feel it deep.
We don't have any rotten heads around here. I got news for you. The chief executive officer of Feeding America, the nation's largest domestic hunger relief organization. She is Claire Babineau-Fontenot. She joins us here on Mission Minded and Bite by Bite. You mentioned the fact that you were born and raised in Louisiana. As a little girl, did you foresee what your purpose was going to be in this world and being the CEO of such a large, wonderful organization back in those days? And based on your socioeconomic upbringing in Louisiana, since we're just a state over here in Alabama, how did that prepare you for where you are now?
It's an interesting thing. I mean, so on the one hand, kind of, yeah. And on the other hand, kind of no. So let me try to unpack that a bit. So I grew up in what would be considered a uniquely large family, even by Southern Catholic standards. I'm one of 108 children. And I know your listeners will go, wait, hold on a second. 108? Did I hear something wrong? I know. In the most important ways, I have 107 brothers and sisters. My parents are in the National Adoption Hall of Fame. Grew up about 16 of us in the house at a time. Those numbers come together, not just from DNA, although some of us share DNA. Mostly we don't. So something that I've known my whole entire life is that you do not have to look to distant shores to find children struggling with hunger. And although other people's moms and dads, mostly moms, and mostly when they were trying to get their kids to eat veggies, they'd say, you better eat that food. You know, they're hungry kids in China. My mom never had to say that to us. We knew there are hungry kids right here. So I've known my whole entire life that hunger was here, that it didn't look like one thing, that it did not affect only one person or one type of person, that there are lots of people who had as one of the obstacles to thriving in their lives, hunger. I experienced hunger myself. I experienced hunger in college when many people who have taken education as their pathway to progress, who don't even have food, let alone gas to put in a car to get to class. So in one way, I knew in my bones that I was not living in the environment I was growing up in for nothing. That was supposed to mean something. So I decided as a little girl, I was going to be a lawyer. And I told my daddy, who hadn't even graduated from high school, that when I grew up, and by the way, I was sassy, so I had my hand on my hip. And I told my daddy, when I grow up, I'm going to be a lawyer. And he said, of course you will. Of course you will. Fast forward, I became a lawyer. But maybe other people who listen in have had a life that took some twists and turns that they weren't expecting. So here's what I didn't expect. I didn't expect that I'd go to law school only to become a tax lawyer, that I'd become a tax litigator, that I'd say yes to all kinds of great opportunities, including being a gubernatorial appointee in the great state of Louisiana and running all tax litigation, being in a major accounting firm, Big Four accounting firm, being a partner in charge of the Capital City offices, which for your listening audience, they will all know that means Baton Rouge, for a U.S. World News top law firm. Didn't imagine I'd get the chance to do any of those things. Didn't imagine that Walmart would become one of my clients while I was at the accounting firm, and then that they'd follow me to the law firm, and then they'd ask me to come in-house. Didn't imagine that I'd go in-house and I'd be there for about 11 years before I went to the doctor and found out I had cancer. Didn't expect those things to happen in that order. But once it did, it gave me another chance to remind myself of why I wanted to go to law school to begin with, and remind myself that I don't get always, but I've got now. I started leaving Walmart when I heard the doctor say I had cancer. I didn't physically leave for another 2 years, but I mentally started leaving. I told him I'm going to leave. We started working on what that plan looked like. Didn't know where I was going to go. Just knew that Walmart was going to make it too attractive for me to stay if I waited until I had the perfect opportunity. After I left, wow, the perfect opportunity. I'm now the CEO of Feeding America, the largest hunger relief organization in the United States. And I have the privilege of working with the likes of people like Mike all across the country. I have the privilege, when things are looking ugly out there, and I don't just mean the clouds in the sky, to go to communities all across the country. I've been to all 50 states during the pandemic. I've been to over 190 of our food banks, and I plan to go to every one that will have me. And every place I go, I find good people rolling their sleeves up, crossing all kinds of divides to focus on making sure everybody has enough to eat. So it's kind of,
Claire, you mentioned something about when you're in college that you struggle with food insecurity. One of the things that we've really pushed hard since I've been here is two big things. One is our vet population. We have a huge vet population here. And another is college hunger. And we have great support. Alabama struggles in a lot of areas, but we have a fantastic community college system. And they have 100% gotten behind food insecurity. And so there's 25 campuses across the state. 16 of them now have headquarters. They have branches, but 16 of them now have pantries. We just opened up one here in Montgomery and Trenum. It was really well done, very encouraged. But I find myself, when I was talking about college hunger, I find that so much of my mission is educating the public. I was talking to somebody middle upper class, and they said college hunger. I mean, why don't the parents just get a meal card? Mm-hmm. And they were not being flippant, but they were speaking from their experience.
Yes.
And if you've never been and walked through those shoes or walked alongside of somebody, even if you haven't been in those shoes exactly yourself, walking along somebody and sharing that moment with them and seeing things from their perspective, it lets you know just how much ignorance it is. Now, what I am encouraged by this, and I've got a bigger question to ask you, what I am encouraged by is that when I do take the time to explain, our neighbors have proven to be very open in terms of giving, but it's just they don't know that need even exists.
Yes.
So a lot of it, I find, is just educating the public on what the general need is and how people get into those situations. So I was going to ask you, I know you've been through all that, but on a national level, kind of what do you see FANO's big role in? Because I'm just like every other CEO. We're on the ground speaking to the local. How do you kind of see the primary role of feeding the
community? Oh, that's a huge part of our responsibility. So let me start by saying there were a few silver streaks that came along with the big, dark, gray clouds that was COVID. And as COVID was unfolding, I knew it was going to happen. I always knew to bet on the generosity of the American public. Mm-hmm. The American people are the most generous civilization in the history of civilization that's been documented. But I knew that there was also a disconnect, which is the one you just talked about, right? That people, why would parents tell their kids there are hungry kids in China if they knew there were hungry kids next door? They wouldn't. It's not the way we think about ourselves as a general rule, unless we've been very either experienced it or been very close to it, to your point. So I knew that during COVID, when people saw those long lines of those cars, and as it turned out, it was often really cold outside or often really hot outside. And people were like, why would you wait in line all that time? When people, during the shutdown, for instance, when they said, huh, wait a minute. So these people in the line, what if they worked in the hotel industry and they woke up one morning and they met, by the way, at the hotel, they met, dated, married, and now have a family. And they worked at a hotel. And then overnight, the hotel was shut down. How long would it take them to be in that line? So I think people assumed before the pandemic either that it's a small problem affecting just a few, not realizing there were tens of millions of people turning to the charitable food system before the pandemic. 34 million people were food insecure, according to the USDA, in 2019. And that was actually trending down. That was a low bar for food insecurity in the country when that was logged in 2019. But if people thought it was either a small problem or it was a self-inflicted problem. Mm-hmm. So no person like me would ever find themselves, right?
Yeah.
Huh. But then here comes COVID. And COVID says, well, really? So if you're a two-income household and suddenly both of you don't have jobs, so you don't need your income at all then. Your family doesn't need your income at all. And people are like, oh, man, I don't think we could make it past a month or two. Or if we were a two-household income and one of us worked in the hotel industry, it might take us 3 months. So it really helps to create empathy, for both awareness and empathy, for people experiencing hunger. COVID did. There still are many who don't understand, and they'll see headlines that say the economy is improving. And isn't that a beautiful thing? And I'll bet it's true. Or they'll say, see, inflation is on the way down. Unemployment rates are at historic lows. So they'll say, okay, good. That means there's no more hunger. But food insecurity rates last year actually were higher than they've been since the financial crisis. So how could that be? Well, let me give you one example, Mike, with your indulgence. So people who experience hunger talk to us a lot. Tens of millions of us come to you and this whole network, right, over the course of the year. And we've been asking them questions and we've been trying to listen carefully to what they say. And when we ask them things like, why are you in that line to start with? And they'll say, food insecurity is a symptom of poverty, right? Mm-hmm. And I make choices. I have flexibility with food that I don't have with the rent. And rental prices are going through the roof. And oh my goodness, have you seen how much it costs to send a kid to a daycare these days? Are the inflation that we're seeing on food is some of the most stubborn inflation mm-hmm. that we've seen, and it hasn't really gone down. So all of these things are happening, and people aren't aware that all of those things together are what contribute to people being food insecure. And that some of the systems we have in place in the country just make not a lick of sense. We actually have systems that say, well, if you get in many places, if you were to get a couple dollars more per hour at work, you think I'm doing better, right? But if at a couple of dollars less per hour, you got childcare subsidy, which allow you to know for sure that your kids got to go to daycare.
Yeah.
And then you didn't get that $2 more per hour doesn't cover as much as you have to pay for childcare now. Then you're deeper in the hole with the raise than you were without it.
Yeah.
So all of these things are going on all at once. And Mike, just like you've seen, when I've taken the time, number one, to assume that the person with whom I'm speaking cares about his or her community, just like I care about my community. That person is not evil. That person probably doesn't agree with every single thing I'd say. I don't either. That's what changing your mind is, right? That's me not agreeing with myself. So, right. But when you engage with other human beings as human beings and you assume they're good people, they won't let you down. People, this country is filled with really good people.
There you go.
And so we just need to be reminded of it.
Thank you for your thoughts and the life. And again, your leadership example, you really embolden us. And I'll just add one more thing. I wanted to echo what you said about 200 different ways to do this. Not once has Feeding America ever told me how to serve the people in our community. All you've said is, how can we help you do it better? And we're here. And giving us that flexibility to create and see what works and what doesn't work. The best lessons I've learned are when I've had the biggest failures in my life. So thank you for giving us that space. And I hope you have a blessed Thanksgiving and rest of your holiday season.
There's no doubt. I am blessed. And it will be a blessing.
Thank you both.
So the real question is going to be, do you have any good ideas about how to take off about 10, 15 pounds?
I do not.
Oh, no.
That'll be our next podcast. How's that?
Right. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Claire.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.